recorded in Hollywood, California in 1965. Here's the Rolling Stones. Original 7-inch on London Records, an original American 7-inch. That's The Last Time from 1965, recorded out here in Hollywood. You know, the Stones are this strange phenomenon. I haven't really had any interest in the Rolling Stones in the last 30 years. When I've heard new Stones albums or whatever, if I've had the chance to throw them into a Walkman or put some headphones on and listen, it's the same old crunchy rock they perfected at a certain point in the 70s. You guys know me. You know, for something to matter, it has to be relevant. And what the Stones do with their crunchy rock, it fills stadiums and makes them hundreds of millions of dollars. It seemed like they toured every 6 months for like 20 years. You'd have to pay me to go to a Rolling Stones show. I mean, I just would not have any interest in seeing it. No offense to people who are big Stones fans. A few years ago, the very first time I ever saw an IMAX movie was Shine a Light, the Martin Scorsese film of a Rolling Stones concert. And it was really exciting to see Jack White and Buddy Guy make guest appearances, because they were the best part of the show. Christina Aguilera was there as well. And obviously, Martin Scorsese is just like a fanboy to his soul, because he just loves every bit of it. And I have to admit that, you know, in the big 50-foot high or whatever it was, you know, five-story high screen at the IMAX, it was pretty impressive, you know. But the who cares? I mean, the band just was boring. And if you see it, you know, like on a regular DVD player or something like that, or look at it on your phone, it's not impressive at all. You know, what do you say? And what do you say to people who were born in the, say, the 70s or the 80s, and they like the Rolling Stones, they like their perspective on the Rolling Stones? A good friend of mine and I were talking the other day, and I said I was going to do something on Between the Buttons, and he said, ah, that's just kind of a half album. It's just not that great. It was just before they got really good, and by that he meant Beggar's Banquet, Let It Bleed, Sticky Fingers, and Exile on Main Street. The four heavyweights in the Stones catalog that perfected the sound they were doing. Thank Jimmy Miller, you know. And I admit that Exile on Main Street is probably that mythic greatest rock and roll album ever made. But see, I'm an old man, and I'm certainly not as old as Mick and Keith, but I've been following these guys since I was a little kid. And for Christmas in 1967, my mom bought me Between the Buttons. That was one of the things that got, you know, was wrapped in a package under the Christmas tree. The next year, I got the White Album by the Beatles, Beggar's Banquet by the Rolling Stones, and Electric Ladyland by Jimi Hendrix. That was my Christmas present, you know? Ooh. 1967, it was Between the Buttons, which had actually been around for a while. Okay. Christmas 1967, I had just turned 14 years old, all right? So we're talking primal, and we're talking about that time period when you have forever. You know, I'm not driving in a car. I'm not dating a girl. I'm in fucking grade school still, or junior high or something. I have 160 hours a week to listen to this music or something like that, you know? And so it pervades my soul. It dives so deep into me. So I don't know what the perspective is of somebody who's, say, 25 years old and likes the Rolling Stones, but only knows them from the heavyweights in the catalog, the stuff that gets played on the radio. And these earlier albums, you know, what do you do? I like the later albums. I wouldn't say Exile is the greatest rock and roll album ever made if I didn't like it. But there's something in this weird period. Aftermath was completely recorded in Los Angeles. But Between the Buttons, which is the follow-up album, started in L.A. Andrew Lou Goldham, who was their producer at the time, and this was his final recording with them, though he pieced together another thing after Between the Buttons called Flowers. They came out in the summer of 1967. Between the Buttons came out in February 1967. So this was the kind of the last stand of Andrew Lou Goldham being a manager figure for the Rolling Stones. And this was transitional period. And Brian Jones is in full power during these sessions. He's not just a drug recluse. So the recordings that became Between the Buttons began in Los Angeles on the 3rd of August, 1966, at RCA Studios, produced by Andrew Oldham with the sound engineer of Dave Hassinger. And for about 9 days, the group recorded backing tracks here in Hollywood. They finished a couple songs, but they basically laid down the backing tracks, or basic versions, of all the tracks on the album. So they'd been writing the songs all along. And there are even some titles here that are unknown to me that never finished, you know. So here, for example, let's get us started. Here is the backing track from Yesterday's Papers. And Jack Nitzsch, who I was just playing, actually plays on this. And this is recorded in Hollywood and is the beginning of these days. Thank you. So that's the backing track for yesterday's papers that was recorded in Hollywood in early August. Now, they recorded the rest of the album, though Oldham kept returning to Hollywood to do the final mix at a couple different studios in London. And it's in London that they finished the single, a non-album single. It didn't appear in an album until a greatest hits collection the next year. Here's the 45 of Have You Seen Your Mother, Baby, Standing in the Shadows. You see, that's what was happening with these guys. They were experiencing pop stardom, and that's what they wanted. They may have been a blues band to begin with, but pop stardom was what it was all about. Nothing wrong with admitting that either. And Have You Seen Your Mother, Baby? There's a cynical side. Remember, there were photos. There's a promo film, and there were photos of them in drag for the 7-inch sleeve for that 45. I actually had that 45 with the 7-inch sleeve. Oh, wish I still had it. Worth a lot of money nowadays. That's where they were. You know, they were pushing the edges all the way around. And it's kind of important to note what was going on at the same time as they began to record this album in August. Because just only a few weeks before the end of June 1966, Bob Dylan had his motorcycle accident. And as of them entering the studio in August, no one knew for sure what had happened to him. There were no reports that he was dead. And Bob Dylan is all over Between the Buttons in the sense that they have been listening to him. And the album that he had just released is his greatest triumph of the 60s, Blonde on Blonde. So Blonde on Blonde, this double record set, drug-induced, hallucinatory, late-night country music mixed with superb rock music, nothing like it in history, nothing. That was what they were listening to. And as of the beginning of August, the Beatles put out Revolver. So they got Blonde on Blonde and they got Revolver. And they were the third group at that point. They were just as important. Sure, Brian Wilson was over, but Brian was way off with their in their surf clothes. And the Stones were on a different level about this. And another interesting thing to think about, when you think about 1966 Rolling Stones, Keith Richard was straight. He was not the drug addict that he became in the 70s, not yet. As Donald Campbell said, the Stones were lightweights at the time when he first met them. But they were transitioning and the music was getting better and more powerful. Let me read to you the little rhyme that Charlie Watts wrote for the back cover. Okay? Let's try this. Between the buttons. To understand this little rhyme, you first must tap your foot in time. Then the buttons come much nearer, and the Stones you see more clearer. Between the buttons started as a laugh, but pretty soon turned into a farce. Between the buttons, between the fibers, we know a lot have called us liars. Between the buttons, behind the dirt, you know at times you're often hurt. Say, is that a boy or a girl? Between the buttons at last did fit. And so to prove it, here they sit. You know, they ain't so bad after all. Between the buttons, on the ledge, do seem at times to go over the edge. Have you seen your mother, baby? Well, I like it. Well, I don't know. But before you hand us the cup, count your buttons before doing them up. Nah, they ain't as never will be. What do you think they're up to now? Hi, Mick. Love your latest. Now, I have both the mono and the stereo mixes of this wonderful album that I've loved. I have at home the American version of Between the Buttons as well as the British version of Between the Buttons in mono and stereo. The problem with the American version, it's the original 80s CD, and if I were to grade the CD, I would give it an F. It is truly an abysmal transfer. It's like they took a poor quality cassette and turned that into a CD. So it is the remixes from the 2000s where the album starts to shine again. And so when I look closely at these things here, but the differences between mono and stereo, one thing I note is, for instance, yesterday's papers in mono has an extra chorus that isn't in stereo. I can't say that for every track because it's too complicated. The American version was much different and it had extra songs. We'll get into those. Because in the United States, we put singles on albums. And in Britain, it was felt that wasn't a very nice thing to do, to put a single on an album. So the British version begins with yesterday's papers. Here's the stereo mix.
Who wants yesterday's papers? Who wants yesterday's gun? Who wants yesterday's papers? Nobody in the world. Who wants yesterday's papers? Nobody in the world.
giant in the world. All of these people just can't wait to fall right into their big mistake.
During the same fall time period that the Stones were recording Between the Buttons, Brian Jones was recording his soundtrack to the movie A Degree of Murder, and they were working with Chris Farlow and even the Beatles. Brian Jones was appearing on the Beatles' track Yellow Submarine during that same summer. The Rolling Stones did an American tour in 1966, which is why they were in, you know, the U.S. when they recorded. Then they did a British tour in the fall, which they recorded for the album that was released called Got Live, If You Want It. It's the record that I count as the beginning of my record collecting. The first Stones album that I got, and it, you know, I guess you'd say it changed my life. That was recorded in October 1966, and between November 8th and November 26th, the Stones were at Olympic Sound and at Pi Studios in London. And they finished the album. And in December, they did some final mixing sessions and some overdubs. Nicky Hopkins came in and overdubbed stuff with Ian Stewart and Jack Nitzsche's piano recordings. Yeah, the Stones were, in the fall of 1966, they were Mick Jagger on vocals, Keith Richard on guitar, Bill Wyman on bass, Charlie Watts on drum, Brian Jones on random instruments, though second guitar was primarily what he was known for. Ian Stewart played piano, though Jack Nitzsche was on piano. So at the end of the year, they ended up releasing a single in the U.S. and the U.K. that was a double-sided hit. The single did not appear on the British version of the album. So here is that single. One side is Ruby Tuesday, and the other side is Let's Spend the Night Together.
She would never say where she came from. Yesterday don't matter if it's gone. While the sun is bright, or in the darkest night, no one knows. She comes and goes. Be so free. She'll tell you it's the only way to be. She just can't be chained to a life where nothing's gained and nothing's lost at such a cost. Catch your dreams before they slip away. Dying all the time. Lose your dreams and you may lose your mind. Ain't life unkind? Goodbye, Ruby Tuesday. Who could hang a
Oh, weren't those different times when that could be considered a controversial lyric? But of course, you know, if you look for it, you can find a clip of the Stones on the Ed Sullivan Show, and Jagger sings, "Let's spend together." He doesn't say the night because he was asked not to sing it because it was considered to be too controversial. Oh, what a world we live in, eh? Eh? Here's an actual outtake from Between the Buttons. It's called Get Yourself Together. It's a Jagger Richards. Called Get Yourself Together, and that's an outtake from Between the Buttons. So let's address that Jagger and Richards have both said they didn't like this album, which I think has more to do with Andrew Luke Oldham. And I think when Oldham moved to the States to do the mixing, I think he was trying to get away from the Stones so he could control the final mix himself. So I don't think Mick and Keith, you know, had a say in the final mix on things. I think that annoyed them, though Jagger more specifically said that they'd recorded the backing tracks on 4-track out here in Hollywood, and then they had a more multiple-track player for recording in London. So they had to dub the 4-track masters onto the multi-tracks, and as far as Jagger was concerned, that muted their sound somewhat. I think the sound is superb, but then that's because that's what my ears have always heard. Jagger said that the song that he liked best out of it was the song called Backstreet Girl, which is, I think, an entirely beautiful song, and it represents an entire style. It's British upper crust. And this fits the feel of English summer. It's also slightly psychedelic, even though it's absolutely straightforward acoustic music, quite beautiful. But there's a piercingness to it that I find to be so enticing. So here's the mono mix of Backstreet Girl.
Just want you to be around. Please come right up to my ears. You will be able to hear what I say. Don't want you out in my world. Just you be my Backstreet Girl. To yourself, please don't you bother my wife. That way you won't get no help. Don't try to ride on my horse. You're rather common, of course, anyway. Don't want you out in my world. You be my Backstreet Girl.
Just play a couple of these songs that show the darker psychological side. This is the one that always kills me.
Now, confession. what to say, girl. You see what is wrong. You must be joking. You was led along. The butler, the baker, the laughing cavalier. So tell me now, who's been sleeping here? I wanna know. What you say, girl? Who'd you see that night? I was doing something right. Oh, the soldier, the sailor, the man, there's the three musketeers. So tell me now, who's been sleeping here? Did I ever tell you I wanna know? Like a golden lock. Yeah. Must be somewhere you can stop. Yes, there's a northness on these boys, the old British brigadier.
Boyfriend, your girlfriend, oh, that was so suggestive to me. Like I say, I got this for Christmas 1967. I was 14 years old. Sometime in the next 6 months at a music store in Peoria, I found the sheet music to the American version of this album. It had the same cover. I'll mention the cover photo, which is a blurry Vaseline-smeared image. Early morning of the Rolling Stones, they had been at Pi Studios recording overnight, and then they went out and shot the photos in the early morning at dawn, and they looked tired and beat. At the time, a lot of people said that Brian Jones looked absolutely terrible on the cover, and he wasn't even out of his skull yet, but he does look pretty messed up. In the back cover of the CD, he looks pretty good, so that was just the picture they picked. And if you actually look at the Out of Our Heads album, which has all five of their spotty faces on it, Brian gets the majority of the picture because he is the pop star. By 1967, he was the pop star fading part of the group. They were still pop stars, real pop stars. Like I say, I had the sheet music, so I'm going to play something ridiculous here. This is ridiculous. One of the weird things about this particular album is that in the summer of 1969, I ventured out of my home. I was 15 years old. I really didn't know anything about anything, but I decided to audition for a musical in Peoria, and I had never done this before. I had never sung in front of anybody. I did not know anything about it at all. I was beginning everything. Like I say, I had the sheet music to Between the Buttons, and I used to sit at the piano and pick at the songs, mostly just the melody lines. And I was very unsure of myself, but I thought I should audition for this musical, which was a production of George M. that was being done at a local theater. But I didn't know anything about auditioning. They just told me, bring a song. So the song I brought is this one from the Rolling Stones. So I brought this sheet music up to the guy at the piano, and he played this, and I tried to sing this. Here's a song called Complicated. Like I say, this stuff just touches something so deep inside me. Let me play now. I'm going to play the whole album for you. So let me play now. Here's a track that wasn't on the American release. This ended up on the Flowers collection that Luke Oldham put together in the next 6 months after the release of Between the Buttons. But this was on the British version, and this is downright psychedelic. This is the Rolling Stones pre-Satanic Majesty's Request trying to do a completely psychedelic riff. I believe Shirley Watts, Charlie's wife, is singing backup on this. This is, of course, Please Go Home. So Please Go Home was a track that I knew from Flowers, all right? Now let me play for you a couple of the more featured strange pieces that were, to me anyway, they were strange pieces. They had a slightly different feel. This is more organ-based, and Billy Bragg has done a great cover of it. But this is the Stones, and this is She Smiled Sweetly. And then I'm going to play Miss Amanda Jones.
Why do my thoughts loom so large on me? They seem to stay for day after day and won't disappear. I've tried every way, but she smiles sweetly. She smiles sweetly. She smiles sweetly and says, don't worry. Oh, no, no, no. made of her that keeps her peace most every day and won't disappear. My hair's turning gray, but she smiles sweetly. She smiles sweetly. She smiles sweetly and says, "Don't worry."
Miss Amanda Jones, "Hey girl, your suspender shows." And the girl behind you looks a bit unsure.
Down and down she goes.
All Sold Out is the first track on side two of Between the Buttons. Another odd thing is that Aftermath, which was released in the spring of 1966, for the Sweet Solstice show, when I said it was released on June 20th, 1966, that was in the States. That was the U.S. version. The album was released in April in the U.K. And Aftermath was a gigantic hit album. It was number one on the U.K. charts for 8 weeks. Between the Buttons didn't make it to number one at all. It made it to number three. It was very successful. It sold 1 million copies, yada, yada. It sold very, very well in the States. But it wasn't quite as successful as Aftermath. Maybe that's another reason why Mick and Keith don't regard it on the same level. Well, now we're getting down to the gritty. And if you're a Between the Buttons fan, there's one song that means everything. It's called Connection. Now, when I was young, you wonder, what was this song about? Was this about drug connections? Was it about something else? Or was it, well, what was it? Now, all these years later, I can listen to it, and it's about bags and airports and losing luggage and kind of normal stuff like that. But, you know, in the panic, manic, drug-induced world of the late 60s and early 70s, it had multiple levels of meanings. And it's a song that, if you're a hardcore Between the Buttons fan, it's the one for you. So I'm going to play first the stereo mix, then the mono mix of Connection.
The doctor wants to give me more.
connection. It's too short. It's only 2 minutes and 9 seconds long. I want it to be longer. I want it to go further. But now we're left with, there are two more tracks on the album, and then you'll have heard the entire Between the Buttons. And the last two tracks are the last track. You know, this was an LP from 1967. It wasn't a CD, so there are two sides to the record. And the end of side one and the end of side two are both long songs, though they're only a little over 4 minutes, less than 5 minutes, both of them. And they represent the edge of things. They have bands, they have orchestral stuff in them, or there's a band stuff in them. And they're really odd, especially the second one. The first is called Cool, Calm, and Collected. But the last song on the album, Something Happened to Me Yesterday. Talk about your Dylan influence. Something Happened to Me. They never explain what it was that happened. All right. But it's so Dylan-esque. At the end, Jagger even says, remember, if you're on your bike, wear white. That's a specific reference to Bob Dylan's motorcycle accident. If you're on your bike, wear white. These are strange songs. Keith sings half of Something Happened to Me Yesterday. It's utterly charming to hear his voice. So here is Cool, Calm, and Collected, and Something Happened to Me Yesterday as we finish our hour with Between the Buttons and the Rolling Stones and English Summer.
something happened to me yesterday. Something I can't speak of right away. Something happened to me. Something also groovy. Something happened to me yesterday.
Right or wrong, maybe he should tell someone. He's not sure just what it was, or if it's against the law.
Something. Something very strange I hear you say. You're talking in a most peculiar way. But something really threw me. Something also threw me. Something happened to me yesterday.
Yesterday.
He don't know just where it's gone. He don't really care at all. No one's sure just what it was. All the
something.
What kind of joint is this?
Not forgetting the boys in the band and our producer, Reg Thorpe, would like to say, God bless. So if you're out tonight, don't forget, if you're on your bike, wear white.
Evening all.
So Between the Buttons happened to me yesterday. Thanks for listening to the Chill Room. We're still expanding. We never stop here on killradio.org. In the meantime, stay tuned.